Hello, listeners. I want to take a moment to thank you all for listening to this podcast. I especially want to thank our new patrons, Leah Hall, James Payne, and DJ Rout. Your support is extremely valuable and much appreciated, and I hope that you're enjoying all the extra content you now have access to.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 67, Lindsay, the Vanished Kingdom. The great professor of Anglo-Saxon history, Simon Keynes, once called Lindsay a kingdom without a history. This is because there is no written evidence from the kingdom itself, and only a tiny amount written about it from contemporaries. However, there is some evidence in the form of archaeology which can shed some valuable light on aspects of Lindsay's history. In today's episode, we will ask how accurate it is to say that Lindsay is a kingdom without a history. The Kingdom of Lindsay was located in eastern England between the rivers Witham and Humber. The kingdom seems to have possessed an independent identity in the 6th and 7th centuries, but by the early 8th century it had entirely succumbed to its more powerful neighbours, specifically to Mercia. This occurred so comparatively quickly that no written history of Lindsay survives. Lindsay is, as Simon Keynes calls it, a kingdom without a history. The kingdom was so thoroughly obliterated that even the seat of its bishopric, called in Latin Sidensis Civitas, cannot be identified with any certainty. What we can know of Lindsay must be reconstructed from patchy evidence. It can be speculated that the core of Lindsay developed around the Roman settlement of Lindum. This Lindum was originally founded as a legionary fort, but as Roman occupation spread northwards, it evolved into a colonia. A colonia being a kind of Roman frontier town meant to establish a base of Roman civil and military life in conquered territory. The name Lindum is suggested to derive from a Brittonic word meaning pool, possibly a reference to Brayford Pool. Like most other Roman settlements, Lindum was largely abandoned following the withdrawal of Roman troops from Britain. Archaeological evidence suggests, though, that the church in Lindum continued to be used, perhaps indicating some continued Romano-British presence there. When the Anglians settled the east coast of England, they likely encountered some of this continuing British society around Lindum. They anglicised the name of the settlement to Lincolna, which eventually became Lincoln. Thus, the core of Lindsey may have originally been what is today the city of Lincoln. The main tribe of the region, identified in the tribal hidage, also called themselves the Lindisfarras, a name which further suggests some cultural ties to the old settlement of Lindum. If this name sounds familiar, it's because one theory for the origin of the name Lindisfarne is that it referred to pilgrims coming from Lindsey. Bede does provide some evidence for close ties between Northumbria and Lindsey, especially on religious matters, with his frequent references to bishops and monks from that kingdom. Clearly, although by the time he wrote his ecclesiastical history, Lindsey may well have been subjected to Mercian rule, he retained a strong interest in the kingdom and its church, and had contacts enough there to add significantly to his history. The continuity in names all suggests that in Lindsey, as in Northumbria, there was a significant degree of continuity between pre- and post-Saxon communities, possibly with some people of Lindsey continuing to identify with a Brittonic culture into the 8th century, although that's speculation. In terms of size, the tribal hidage assigns Lindsey about 7,000 hides, making it comparable to other middle-sized kingdoms, such as the Wiltshire and Essex. The kings of Lindsey were notable enough to have their genealogy preserved in the so-called Anglian Collection, a collection of royal genealogies from the various Anglian kingdoms composed probably during the time of Offa. The king's list for Lindsey is fairly conventional, including as it does Woden as a divine ancestor. It also traces the king's ancestry back to a mythical Yeot, who may well be the ancestor of the Yeats, the tribe of Beowulf. Other than this, we know nothing of any of the kings of Lindsey, not even dates. The last king listed is one Aldfrith, so presumably he was the one reigning in Lindsey at the time of the collection's creation during the reign of Offa. But this is very little to go on. Given Offa's tendency to demote kings of neighbouring kingdoms, it's not certain that Aldfrith was still king of Lindsey at the time. He may well have been dead by Offa's time, we simply don't know. The historian Frank Stenton, writing in the 1940s, suggested that Aldfrith witnessed one of Offa's charters, a fact that would make him contemporary with Offa. However, the name in the charter, which is something like Eldfrid or Eldfrith, is now generally thought not to be a reference to Aldfrith. In fact, nowadays it's generally considered to be a garbled form of Edgefrith, Offa's son, who doesn't appear in the charter. So we know nothing really about the early history of Lindsey or its kings, at least nothing with much certainty. What we can say with certainty, though, is that Lindsey, despite its relative obscurity, was not a poor kingdom. Excavations at Flixborough at South Humberside demonstrate that Lindsey had at least one advanced wick, a coastal trading settlement. The settlement was active between the 7th and 11th centuries. Flixborough housed about 40 buildings at its height and left abundant evidence for industry. Pottery produced in the Seine Valley in France was imported at Flixborough, attesting to the community's international ties. The wealth is further reflected in the abundance of fine tableware used at the site. The height of these finds lies in the 7th and 9th centuries, the period in which Lindsey existed but was presumably absorbed into Mercia. The discovery of animal bones at Flixborough also suggests that it was a community with very many meat eaters. Many of these animals seem to have been larger than average by English standards at the time, further demonstrating the wealth of Flixborough in the 7th to 9th centuries. At some point in the 9th century, the conspicuous consumption of early Flixburgh seems to have ended, and a more possibly monastic community seems to have become dominant, alongside a community of artisans and craftspeople. 9th century Flixburgh has yielded up a hoard of over 20 styluses, along with several inscriptions. One of these, found on a lead plaque, consists of 7 Old English names, all of which are male except for one. Debate is ongoing as to whether this reflects a monastic school at Flixburgh, but certainly it indicates that Flixburgh was home to a substantial literate population. From the 9th century on, Flixburgh became less of a residential site and primarily a place of production. In its early history, though, Flixburgh was certainly home to a powerful and wealthy population, able to consume large amounts of high-quality meat and import high-quality products from abroad. This indicates that Lindsay itself had an elite of some kind, and it was not one to be sniffed at. How this played into the kingdom's disappearance, if at all, is unknown. What Lindsay demonstrates clearly, though, is that these medium-sized kingdoms were not inherently inferior to their neighbours. They could also command wealth and prestige, but that in itself was not a guarantee of historical importance. In the end, Lindsay died in silence, just as it was born in silence. In the sense that Lindsay has left no written evidence, Simon Keynes's characterization of it as a kingdom without a history holds true. But it's worth asking, what kind of history is meant here? Keynes seems to be referring to a coherent historical narrative. The names and places and dates that are the foundation of much history in the popular consciousness. Lindsay has none of these, and in this sense, it is indeed a kingdom without a history. But in another sense, Lindsay very much does have a history of its own. The excavations at Flixburgh are exceptional for the amount of evidence they've yielded up about the social and economic development of a key port within Lindsay. From this port, we can speculate something about the development of Lindsay as a whole, although this will always be just speculation. Even the evidence of place names and tribal names allows us to speculate about the development of Lindsay, albeit with caveats. In this sense, Lindsay very much has a history, just not a narrative one. It seems worth considering whether this sets Lindsay apart from other relatively large Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. Northumbria, East Anglia, and Mercia all suffer problems of historical coverage, most likely resulting from damage caused by Norse invaders. In all of these cases, once Bede finished his ecclesiastical history in 731, our knowledge of their history becomes significantly more opaque. Lindsay, lying as it did on the eastern coast of England, was particularly susceptible to many of these same factors, especially Norse raiding. But certainly by the time the Norse arrived in England, and possibly even by the time Bede wrote his history, Lindsay was long gone. Even at its height, Lindsay was only a middle-sized kingdom. And it seems that the bulk of its intellectual capital was invested in Northumbria. It's entirely possible, then, that Lindsay never did produce the kinds of documents which allowed us to reconstruct history in large enough quantities to make their survival likely. We see this with The Witcher, how even people who were relatively insulated from Norse attack could nevertheless leave only a small amount of evidence from which to establish its history. Flixburgh too, though remarkably wealthy at its height, was only short-lived and eventually supplanted by even wealthier Wicks further to the south, Wicks that were closer to the heartlands of power in Anglo-Saxon England. Thus, while Lindsay may have vanished from history, the cause for this was not unique to Lindsay. Instead, Lindsay's obscurity is the result of its medium size and its geographical location. On the whole, the smaller kingdoms have left less of an historical footprint than the larger ones. Add to this the obliteration of old power structures by the Norse, and it becomes clear why Lindsay's history is so obscure. In Lindsay, we find a sobering lesson about how precious each morsel of historical information is. It's all too easy for them to be swept away, and if this occurs, the histories of whole peoples can easily be lost. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune into Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.